Last week, the Russian government announced that Shamil Basayev, one of the top leaders of the Chechen resistance, had been killed in an explosion. On this week's Backstory, we look at the rise of the Chechen rebel leader and how he shaped the Chechen rebellion. And joining me now to talk about Shamil Basayev is Anatol Divin, a senior research fellow at the New America Foundation. He also covered Chechnya for the London Times from 1992 to 1996. It's my pleasure to welcome him back to my show. Hello.
Hello.
Is Basayev's death a major break for the Russian government?
Yes, it is. I wouldn't have said that in the past when the Chechen rebellion was still in full swing, because, for example, it's become clear that Zarqawi's death in Iraq has not made much difference, despite the fact that, obviously, the Bush administration trumpeted it very much. But Basayev's death really comes well into a process in which, in recent years, the Russians have gained very much the upper hand in Chechnya, not so much directly as through their own local Chechen allies. And violence within Chechnya has been reduced enormously in recent years. The full-scale armed rebellion there is effectively over. So Basayev's death really puts the capstone on that. That doesn't mean, of course, that terrorism is at an end, or that the North Caucasus as a whole doesn't remain a very unstable area. But the movement which Basayev headed is very weak now compared to what it was, say, 5 years ago.
Well, the Russian government has claimed his death many times before. This is the first time they were able to confirm it.
Well, it's the first time that that Basayev's supporters have agreed. You know, they've accepted that he is dead.
And the timing couldn't have been better for President Putin, because it was just before Russia hosted the G8 conference. What does that do for him at the G8 conference?
Well, I'm not sure that it does a great deal for him at the G8, because the other members of the G8, although in the past some of them have had sympathy for the Chechen rebellion, or at least for the sufferings of the Chechen people, especially after the Beslan school massacre, every single government represented at the G8 had denounced Basayev as a terrorist and denounced his supporters in very harsh terms as terrorists.
Now, how did he get from his early participation in the rebellion to Beslan? He came a long way. He was prime minister of Chechnya for a while. Was he a popular leader at the beginning?
Well, Basayev has only ever taken part in one election. That was after the Russians withdrew from Chechnya at the end of 1996. And in that election for president of Chechnya, he got just over 20% of the vote. That was only a third of the vote which went to his much more moderate rival, General Aslan Maskhadov. So that although, you know, clearly he had great prestige in Chechnya, especially among Chechen fighters, Basayev was never supported by a majority of ordinary Chechens. And indeed, I mean, one of the greatest charges against him is that although he did not have the support of more than a relatively small minority of Chechens, he nevertheless, after serving briefly as prime minister, went on to rebel against the government of Aslan Maskhadov in the name of Islamic revolution and carrying out a new jihad against Russia in the Caucasus as a whole. So it's worth remembering Basayev was not just a rebel against the Russians, he had also been a rebel against his own elected Chechen state.
He was named in honor of Imam Shamil, who resisted the Tsarist forces in the 19th century. So has his family always supported Chechen independence?
I imagine so. The great majority of Chechens, in principle, would like independence. It's just that, some of them are prepared to compromise on autonomy within Russia, at least, you know, in the medium term, because of all the obvious reasons. And others like Basayev have pushed basically for full independence now. There are a lot of Chechens, even on the Russian side, who in principle would like Chechen independence. But one of the reasons why so many Chechens in recent years have swung to the Russian side, it's partly, of course, because they've come to see the struggle for independence as hopeless, but it's also because they were utterly repelled by the mixture of Islamist extremism and warlordism represented by Basayev and his followers.
But Maskhadov was the head of the rebel forces at the time of his election as president in 1997. So this is just a matter of degree of radicalism?
Well, but also very much the nature of the state, because Maskhadov, although he was forced by internal pressure to declare Chechnya an Islamic Republic and to informally, at least, implement Sharia law, Maskhadov was a former Soviet officer and personally a completely secular figure. He was a nationalist. Whereas over the years, Basayev, who had always been, you know, much more religious, but came under the very strong influence of these international Islamist forces, forming part of the world from which Al-Qaeda comes. And he was pushed towards, you know, precisely the mixture of Sunni Islamist revolution and terrorist violence, which characterizes such groups elsewhere in the Muslim world, you know, whether in Kashmir, in Palestine to some degree, in the Philippines, and so forth.
Hadn't he been radicalized by Russian planes bombing his village, killing 11 of his relatives?
Well, yes, certainly, as many other Chechens were also radicalized by the First Chechen War and Russian violence in that war. But whereas Maskhadov, having achieved de facto Chechen independence in 1996, and the Russians, you have to remember, did withdraw from the whole country, though they didn't formally grant Chechen independence, Maskhadov tried to use that to create a modern Chechen state. Basayev and his followers tried to use that to create an Islamist state, and, as I say, to use Chechnya as a base to continue the war against Russia elsewhere.
Now, why did Russia want to hold on to Chechnya when it allowed so many other countries in the area, or so many of its former Soviet republics, to become independent?
The other republics were not Russian republics. They were Union republics. And it wasn't Russia that ruled them. It was the Soviet Union. When the Soviet Union collapsed, Russia became independent. I mean, I know that it was much more ambiguous in Russia's case, alongside Ukraine, Georgia, and all the other places. Now, in all those cases, the world, the international community, has said that autonomous republics, whether Crimea in Ukraine, whether Abkhazia in Georgia or Nagorno-Karabakh, must in principle remain within the Union republics of which they were part. Russia is simply applying the same principle to Chechnya that Georgia and Azerbaijan are trying to apply to their breakaway republics. So it's not that Russia is forming any kind of exception here, nor indeed in the world in general. I mean, as far as I know, there is no country on the face of the earth which has allowed part of its sovereign territory to go without a fight. Except in very rare cases where there was some kind of formal union, like the Czech Republic and Slovakia. Now, that's at the legal level. At the informal level, the problem is what happened when the Russians withdrew in 1996. Partly, of course, because of the destruction which had occurred in Chechnya during the first war. But Maskhadov failed to establish a modern Chechen state. Instead, Chechnya became a base for these Islamist, terrorist, and indeed criminal attacks across the border into Russia. Which, by the way, I mean, even before terrorist attacks began, and even before Basayev's forces invaded the neighboring Russian Republic of Dagestan, had led to somewhere between 1,100 and 2,000 Russian citizens being kidnapped for ransom. And by the way, a considerable number of Westerners as well. You may remember that four British telecom engineers were kidnapped and beheaded during that period in Chechnya.
Well, but now, not linked to Basayev.
Sorry?
Not linked directly to Basayev.
Well, by a group which was allied to Basayev at the time and which participated in Basayev's invasion of Dagestan. So, yes, linked to Basayev. But I would like to suggest that there are not many countries, and Israel, as we know, is certainly not one of them, which would long have tolerated the existence of such a territory on their border, I mean, especially if it was still legally part of their territory. Now, I have to add that I myself strongly opposed the Second Chechen War and Russia's intervention in Chechnya in 1999, because I did think that it would simply lead to an endless terrorist problem, which is indeed what we've seen. But it's worth pointing out that it was Basayev and his Islamist allies who invaded Russia first in August of 1999, and not the other way around.
I'm talking with Anatol Levin, who's a senior research fellow at the New America Foundation in Washington, D.C., but he did cover Chechnya for the London Times from 1992 to 1996. And you met Basayev, didn't you?
Yes, on several occasions, both before and during the First Chechen War.
And what were your impressions of him?
Well, he changed a great deal over the period that I knew him. I met him first when he was actually leading a Chechen force in the Abkhaz War, fighting rather bizarrely effectively on the side of Russia against Georgia. And in those days, and before the Russian intervention of December 1994, he, of course, was a pious Muslim, and he never made any secret of his passionate desire for Chechen independence. But in his personal style and that of his family, he was certainly not a radical Islamist figure. I mean, there was no resemblance between him and the Arab militants who I'd met previously in Afghanistan.
So he wasn't talking about worldwide jihad?
No. That, I think, came as a result of two disastrous factors. One was the Russian intervention of 1994 and the colossal suffering that that caused to the Chechen people. And the second was that that intervention sucked into Chechnya these international Islamist extremists, not very numerous, but with enormous financial resources. And as the Soviets found previously in Afghanistan, and as we're now finding in Iraq, this war then gave these Islamists the chance to, if you will, colonize Chechnya and to gain enormous influence over figures like Shamil Basayev. Partly, I think, simply because they appeared to people like Basayev to be the only other people in the world who are actually helping the Chechens. I mean, many of us in the West and Western reporters tried to help the Chechens by reporting truly on what was happening in Chechnya and putting some kind of diplomatic pressure on Russia. But as far as they could see, the only people who were actually coming to fight for them were these international Islamists, many of them who had previously been affiliated with Al-Qaeda.
But was Al-Qaeda giving them real help or just simply sending people to help in the fight?
Well, Al-Qaeda announced that it was sending real help back in 2000. But one also has to understand that, you know, Al-Qaeda is not a monolithic organization which controls the whole world of Sunni extremism. That world is a kind of net or web with different nodes. I mean, Zarqawi was not, he was allied to Al-Qaeda, but he wasn't directly subordinate to Osama bin Laden, nor are the various Islamist groups based in, you know, in Algeria, Morocco, or even the Philippines. They all have their different centers, but they have the same ideology. They have the same overall set of enemies. And above all, they draw their funds from the same sources. So the Chechen Islamist movement was funded by the same groups like Al-Karamein in Egypt, which also helped to fund Al-Qaeda.
Some of the operations and attacks that Basayev planned seemed to target the more vulnerable. There was the attack on the hospital in 1995. Women and children were targeted in the siege of the school in Beslan in 2004. Was there any kind of rationale behind targeting innocents as opposed to military targets?
Same rationale of terrorists everywhere. They're soft targets. It's not essentially different from, you know, Zarqawi's lot, slaughtering civilians in mosques and marketplaces in Iraq. It's easier to do that than come up against, you know, the American and the Russian army, or even the Iraqi army. And there is also, of course, the moral shock effect, whether, as in the case of the capture of the hospital at Budyonovsk in 95, you actually hope to be able to blackmail Russia into surrender, which, by the way, on that occasion more or less happened.
And he had participated in that attack, didn't he?
He planned and led it.
Which he didn't do in Beslan. There was some disagreement within the rebel movement after the siege of Beslan because the attack had targeted children. So there was a debate even within this group, wasn't there? But he's the man who planned it, so he must have felt that targeting children was quite all right.
Well, it depends on the children. Of course, targeting Russian children, or in this case largely actually Ossi children, they're another Caucasian ethnic group, was clearly quite all right.
Because they weren't their own.
Yes. But as I say, I mean, there's nothing specifically Chechen about that. You know, and the Chechen response, which is a response which has been given by many terrorist movements around the world, is that you, the other side, whether you are the Russians or the Americans or the French in the old days, or you know, you have the artillery and the bombers which you use to bombard our cities, killing women and children. So we're just adopting the same approach by other means. Now, I'm not saying that I agree with that. I don't. And I have always described the Beslan attack as utterly bestial and, frankly, as putting Basayev beyond the pale of humanity.
But that occurred when Putin was in power. The earlier one was when Yeltsin was in power. Were they factors in the way, in the approaches of Basayev? Basayev?
I don't think so. He's always...
He's hated both equally?
Yes. Well, indeed, I mean, and with reason, because, you know, Yeltsin presided over the intervention in 1994, which in my view was totally unjustified in terms of the threat that Chechnya presented in those days. You know, by the time Putin intervened in 1999, you know, you had had 3 years in which Chechnya had proved a very serious problem for Russia indeed, and as I say, one to which any state on earth would have had to respond.
You say that you've seen some sympathy for Basayev in the United States. From whom?
Well, the sympathy has gone down enormously in recent years, above all as a result of Beslan, and the more and more undeniable links between Basayev's forces and international Islamist extremism, and of course as a result of 9/11, naturally. But to begin with, you know, groups like the Jamestown Foundation and the American Committee for Peace in Chechnya expressed great sympathy for the Chechen independence struggle, and including its more militant elements.
What is the current situation in Chechnya? Has the rebellion been largely suppressed?
Yes, it has, and largely not by Russian forces themselves, although they were critical between 2000 and 2003, but by local Chechen forces allied to the Russians, mostly the group called the Kadyrovtsy, after the family that heads them, the Kadyrov family. Now, the Kadyrovtsi are an ambiguous force from Russia's point of view, because on the one hand, they have undeniably been effective in fighting the rebels, and they've done so at much lower cost than the Russians did, simply because, of course, being Chechens, they know their way around much more, and so they're much less likely to carry out, you know, simply indiscriminate attacks or reprisals against the population. On the other hand, they are universally recognized to be an extremely brutal and, above all, extremely corrupt and criminal group who are basically living off Chechnya and redistributing, you know, whatever taxes or, for that matter, simply extortion that they can raise to themselves. So if Russia wishes to bring real stability to Chechnya, and above all, of course, develop that place over time, sooner or later it will have to basically get rid of the Kadyrovtsi and try to replace them with something more modern and more civilized. But, of course, given how much Russia depends on the Kadyrovtsi still and how much they've done for Russia, that's going to be a very, very tricky challenge for the Kremlin. And so far, it's not one that they've shown any willingness to confront.
The militants have said that the explosion that killed Basayev was an accident. Is that likely?
It's possible. I don't think one can say. The Russians have had their successes in both wars. For example, they killed the first Chechen president, Dzhokhar Dudayev, with a lucky missile strike. On the other hand, you know, in wars, accidents also do happen. So it's, you know, I think that's an open question.
Well, thank you so much for participating in today's backstory. Anatole Levin, who has previously covered Central Europe for the Financial Times, Pakistan, Afghanistan, the former Soviet Union, and Russia for the Times of London, and India as a freelance journalist. He is the author of numerous books on foreign policy and is also now at the New America Foundation, where he focuses on global strategy and the war on terror. Thank you again.
Thanks a lot.